Today, Red October and beyond. Hello again, I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the Property Imperative Weekly to the 27th of October 2018. Our digest of the latest finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. As we approach the end of October, which is often a volatile month, the markets are down and the outlook globally and in Australia, to my mind, looks increasingly uncertain. Property and stocks and other asset classes are looking distinctively wobbly, as does the banking sector. I fear money printing will be back on the agenda sooner than many are expecting to try to stop the rot and maintain the wealth effect created as real money loses its true value. And by the way, if you value the content we produce, please do consider joining our Patreon program, where you can support our ability to continue to make great content. Here is the link, and it's in the comments below. We start with the markets, which had one of the worst weeks this year. And let's start in the US, before looking at the local Australian market. And later, we will of course look at the latest property data too. The Dow tumbled on Friday, shrugging off data showing ongoing US economic growth as high-flying tech companies were punished in the wake of downbeat reports from Google and Amazon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 1.19% to 24,688, though remember it hit 23,500 back in April. The S&P 500 fell 1.73%, down to 2,659, while the NASDAQ Composite fell 2.07% and ended at 7,167 on Friday. The three indices are on track for their worst month in years. And the narrow S&P 100 was down 1.82% to 1,189. Now, whether it's a technical correction or not, these are significant falls, and we expect more volatility ahead. The Fear Index, or Volatility Index, ended the week at 24.16, near its recent highs, but still below the February 18 spike. The pair of downbeat reports overshadowed data, showing that the US economy grew 3.5% in the third quarter, above economist estimates for a 3.3% increase, though analysts said a deeper look into the data revealed signs of a possible slowdown. In fact, it was buoyant consumer spending which helped to prop up the numbers. And disappointing business investment suggested the boost in capex from tax cuts and deregulation was likely front-loaded and fading quickly, BNP Paribas said. We continue to expect growth to slow from here as the sugar high in consumer spending turns into a sugar low. Investors grappled with wild swings on Wall Street amid growing concerns that US corporates were approaching peak profit growth after tech heavyweights Google and Amazon delivered underwhelming quarterly reports and signaled softer patches of growth for the fourth quarter. Alphabet fell 1.08% to 1,083 after it posted third quarter revenue that fell short of expectations. And Amazon's shares meanwhile dropped 7.38% to 1,643 as its third quarter revenue also fell short, while its weaker than expected guidance for the key holiday season exacerbated concerns. On the other hand, Intel did better, up 3.11% to 45.69, despite some trade war concerns. The S&P 500 tech sector closed about 2% lower, while the communications services sector, which includes Netflix, Facebook, Alphabet and telecom companies, sank well more than 2%. More broadly, you can list out some of the underlying concerns which are driving the market lower. First, it's the tightening policy of the Federal Reserve. Interest rates in the United States go up, and the Fed lets the market know that it will continue hiking rates next year. Higher interest rates mean that borrowing will become more expensive for US companies, hence the negative impact on stocks. Second is the trade tensions. So far, no end of the mutual tariff blows between the United States and China is in sight, and this creates uncertainty and is bad for business. Then the bumpy earnings season, investors had high expectations as well as less good results so far. Concerns are now spreading about the fate of earnings in 2019, and interest rates would crimp consumers' spending power. Then we cannot overlook the political tensions in America. The US midterm elections will take place on November the 6th, and the pressure is rising. Will the Republicans retain power in the Congress? And add to that more weak housing data, as we discussed last week, and there are worries that rising prices will hamper US economic growth. And more broadly, consensus is growing that global growth is heading south in 2019. That could hit China, Europe, and other centres. Of course, the quest for perpetual growth is in any case unrealistic and stupid, but no one is wanting to change tack and drive towards a more sustainable path. And banks are right in the middle of this, with the S&P 500 financials down 1.39% on Friday to 419.21. Bitcoin slid a little, down 0.24% to 6,553, while gold was up 0.51% to 1,235, and oil was up 0.43% to 67.62. The three-month yield was steady at 2.33, and the 10-year yield was down to 3.077, 15 basis points off its recent highs, although given the Fed's stance, that may only be temporary. One international bank to watch is Deutsche Bank, which has been taking a bath recently. Back in January 2014, it was above 30 euros, but now it's languishing at 8.51 and was down 3.56% on Friday. The plunge in shares for the German lender comes after mixed quarterly figures were released this week, which showed that Deutsche Bank's profits had dropped by 65% in the third quarter. Deutsche Bank revealed a net profit of 229 million euros, a decline from the 649 million euros seen in the same period in 2017. But despite the steep decline, Deutsche Bank officials declared they were still on track to swing to a profit this year, its first since 2014. The German lender has been restructuring under new leadership as it struggles to rebound after three consecutive years of losses. Chief Executive Christian Sewing said, "We have our costs under control and sufficient capital to grow. We are on track to be profitable in 2018 for the first time since 2014. Revenue in the third quarter fell 9%, and Deutsche Bank is currently in the middle of a mass restructuring with 2,800 jobs already cut to bring the headcount down to 94,717. The aim is to drag this number below 90,000 by the end of the year. And the bank predicts a saving of around 900 million euros by 2022 through restructuring, including the merging of the head office and infrastructure. But the bank has very large exposures to derivatives, especially interest rate related. And given the uncertainty around Brexit and the Fed and other factors, it's risk on at the moment. And so now to the local markets. Among the banks, most were up a little on Friday, having dropped the day before. CBA was up 0.83% to end at 65.81. NAB was up 0.69% to 24.70. Westpac was up 0.46% to 25.96. And ANZ was up 0.44% to 24.91. The regionals also bounced a little, with Bendigo and Adelaide Bank up 1.42% to 9.90, Suncorp up 0.28% to 37.65, and the Bank of Queensland up 1.17% to 9.54, after it had dropped significantly the previous day thanks to going ex-dividend. Macquarie was also high, up 0.94% to 111.17, but AMP continues to fall as it reported the loss of more customers despite a fire sale. It ended down another 7.72% to 236. Frankly, it's hard to know where value remains there. The ASX 200 financials remained down, well down, though did rise by 0.35% yesterday to 5,554. The local volatility index was down 9.68% on Friday at 2012, but is still elevated. the Aussie ended at 1792 at the lower end of its recent range, and most commentators expect more falls ahead. Fitch, for example, said, "We are bearish on the Australian dollar over the near term due to a neutral RBA, but suggested that it may change later. They only expect a 25 basis point rate hike from the RBA by the end of 2019, in contrast with 100 basis point worth of hikes from the US Fed over the same period." The ASX 100 ended up just a little at 0.12% to 4,666, but we might expect more downward moves next week. At very least, trading will remain choppy. And to understand why, it's worth looking at the ABS data on the Australian annual national accounts, which show that the size of the economy has reached over $1.8 trillion, reflecting a 2.8% increase in the year 2017-18. This is up from the $1.2 trillion in the year 2007-8, in nominal terms, but household consumption is a large part of the story, contributing 1.6 percentage points, though with incomes and the savings ratio falling, while investment in property is the standout. Households borrowed an additional $981 billion over the 10-year period from 2007-8, while the value of land and dwellings increased by $2.9 trillion over the same period. No wonder the regulators want to maintain the credit bubble. Household gross disposable income plus other changes in real net worth decreased $647 billion or 33.3% in the year 2017-18, thanks mainly to falling property values, and expect more falls ahead. This shows that our economic settings are just plain wrong, yet I suspect more of the same ahead. And note this. The annual national account also included labour productivity by industry estimates, which are only available annually. Australia's labour productivity rose by 0.2%, recording the lowest rise since recording a fall in 2010-11. Agriculture, mining, and utility industries all recorded falls in labour productivity, while service industries such as finance, professional, scientific and technical services, as well as administration support services, were more productive. So to the property market. CoreLogic reported that last week the weighted average clearance rate came in below 50% for the third consecutive week, with 47% of capital city homes selling. There were 1,851 homes taken to auction, having increased just slightly on the 1,817 auctions the previous week, when the clearance rate was 49.5%. 1 year ago, 67.1% of capital city homes cleared at auction, when volumes were considerably high at 2,525. Melbourne's final auction clearance rate showed further softening last week, returning a 50.4% success rate, surpassing the previous week as the lowest recorded since December 2012 at 50.6%. Volumes across the city were relatively stable week on week, with 912 homes taken to auction, only 8 more than the prior week. Clearance rates across the city are now down around 20% on last year, when over the same week, a higher 1,223 homes were taken to auction and 73.2% cleared. In Sydney, the final clearance rate fell last week, with 45.1% of the 647 homes taken to auction selling, down from the 46.1% over the week prior, when 611 auctions were held. 1 year ago, a higher 928 Sydney homes were taken to auction, with a 63.3% clearance rate. Across the smaller markets, Canberra came in with the highest clearance rate last week at 59.6%, with just 67 auctions held and returning a successful result. Brisbane saw the highest number of homes auctioned, with 117 held but only 28.6% sold. And there are 2,009 capital city homes set to go under the hammer this week, increasing on last week's 1,851 auctions but that's much lower than the 2,519 auctions held over the same week last year. Melbourne will see just over 1,000 homes auctioned this week, rising from 912 auctions held last week, and lower than the 1,251 homes taken to market 1 year ago. And activity is set to remain steady across Sydney this week, with around 640 properties scheduled for auction, down only 7 from the final figures last week. 1 year ago, 823 Sydney homes went to auction. So now to developers. More are getting twitchy about the property sector, with both Mirvac and Stockland now selling off land sites in Sydney and Melbourne to reduce risks, according to a report in The Australian. Then there was the latest HIA CoreLogic land report, which on one hand reported that there was a 15.5% annual increase in the median capital city lot price to an all-time high of $336,124, despite a 22% slump in sales volumes and broader housing market weakness. Land supply is clearly an issue, but with demand weakening, these high prices may not be sustainable. This was brought home in the latest from Ernst & Young, which warns that developers are in for a bumpy ride. The combination of falling prices and tightening lending standards has had negative implications for not only developers, but also builders and lenders, noting slowing projects and land sales may affect the timing of cash flows and payments, leaving developers vulnerable in the medium to long term. Thus, declining land values may impact loan-to-value ratios and require developers to generate more or new equity to get new projects off the ground, while declining sales and revenues from projects may not cover returns to equity and debt holders. This could lead to an increase in fire sales, which will reset the market and cause further concerns from a finance perspective. Meantime, both Domain and CoreLogic reported more price falls. CoreLogic said their weekly index dropped 0.05% across the main centres, but with Melbourne down 0.12%. We think Melbourne is at risk now. Domain released its State of the Market report for the September quarter of 2018, which revealed that Sydney and Melbourne home prices fell 3.1% and 3.9% respectively over the quarter, and nationally, house prices were down 2.6%, but of course, there are variations by postcode and property type. Averages tell you very little. And remember, it's the equity being eroded. If you had an 80% loan to value last year, you could easily have lost half now. The banks benefit, of course, homeowners with a mortgage do not. S&P's latest SPIN index, the measure of defaults on residential-backed mortgage securities for August, was mixed. The read was 1.36% in August, down from 1.38% in July, and arrears have typically decreased month on month in August for the past 5 years. At 1.36%, however, arrears are noticeably higher than the August average for the past 5 years of 1.13%, though they remain low overall. They say there has been an ongoing increase in home loans that are more than 90 days in arrears, and loans more than 90 days past due reached 0.74% in August, making it around 54% of total arrears. This is up from 42% 5 years ago. And this is consistent with our mortgage stress data, where more households are getting into more financial difficulty. Regional bank mortgage originations reported the highest percentage of loans more than 90 days in arrears at 1.33% in August, followed by the major banks at 0.99%. And some of the increases due to geographic influences. This is most evident in the regional bank portfolios, which have a 35% exposure to Queensland compared with 28% for the entire portfolio, and 18% exposure to Western Australia, compare with 11% for the entire portfolio. The downturn in the mining sector and an ongoing drought in agricultural areas are placing pressures on mortgage payments in Queensland and Western Australia. And they concluded, we expect falling house prices to put further pressure on mortgage arrears in coming months. Borrowers with higher loan-to-value ratios are more likely to be affected by softening property prices because they have not had time to build up equity or accumulate mortgage buffers. This could trip some borrowers into a negative equity position, which could significantly impede their refinancing prospects in the current lending environment. Across all RMBS loan portfolios, we expect borrowers with loan-to-value ratios of 80% and higher to be the most at risk. These loans account for around 13% of RMBS loan portfolios. Now, negative equity could become a big issue if prices do continue to fall. And we ran some modelling for the AFR, which was reported today, where 350,000 households are at risk if prices were to fall peak to trough by 20%, which is, by the way, not our worst case scenario. They even created an interactive tool using our data. Comparison site Rate City illustrates the impact of a 20% fall during the 2 years to December 2019, depending on when a property was purchased. A medium-priced Sydney home of $745,000 bought in 2013 with a 10% deposit would have an estimated value of $836,000 in December 2019, a profit of nearly $44,000, and an estimated loan-to-value ratio of 71%, according to Rate City. But a medium-priced house in Sydney worth $930,000 in December 2015 with the same deposit would be, by the end of next year, worth $836,000, a loss of more than $154,000 if sold or at an LVR of 93%. The same property purchased for $1,005 million in December 2017 would, on these numbers, sell next December for a loss of $278,000. These estimates do not include interest paid, loan mortgage insurance, stamp duty, moving costs, marketing and legal expenses, which could together add another 10% to the cost of purchasing a property. And this week, there was a silly report from the Master Builders claiming to model the impact of Labour's proposed changes to negative gearing. They claimed it would cause major falls in home prices and rises in rents and kill the construction sector. But they failed to model in the minor fact that Labour would grandfather existing gearing arrangements and still provide support for new developments. In fact, Macquarie debunked the modelling in short order and concluded there would be but a small impact flowing through to GDP. In fact, we think this is the ideal time to bring in such a reform when property investors are on the sidelines, and in fact, it might well stimulate new builds. And more poor arguments were abroad this week as people tried to head off the Royal Commission outcomes before they're delivered. We made a submission on the interim report, and you can watch our video on this. But amazingly, Treasury Secretary Philip Gages told a Senate estimates hearing in Canberra on Wednesday that a key risk to Australia's strong economy is banks cutting their lending too much in response to the Royal Commission into Financial Services and tougher credit rules imposed by the Prudential Regulator, amid complaints from small businesses and home buyers that they are finding it harder to gain finance. He said a tightening of credit conditions could constrain household consumption and business investment. There is also some evidence of a modest tightening in lending standards by banks, which could be limiting access to credit for some borrowers who may previously have been able to borrow, he said. And the RBA is at it too. The Reserve Bank of Australia and Treasury have privately cautioned the Morrison government that any regulatory response to the Royal Commission must be careful to avoid putting the brakes on lending to home buyers and business. And in the minutes of its October meeting on monetary policy, the RBA notes that members discussed the release of the interim report of the Royal Commission into misconduct in the banking, superannuation and financial services industry. The report contains many questions covering a broad range of issues, but at this stage provides relatively little indication of the recommendations that are likely to be made in the final report, the minutes said. Members observed that while the regulators have already overseen a tightening of lending standards and a degree of tightening of lending standards has been implemented by banks in anticipation of the Commission's findings, it was possible that banks could tighten lending conditions further, given the issues raised in the report. Members noted that it would be important to monitor the future supply of credit to ensure that economic activity continued to be appropriately supported. Now, let's be clear. A decade of too loose lending has to be brought under control. The Royal Commission has done a great job in shining a light into the dark places, and yes, it's not pretty. And also, the banks are now tightening their lending criteria, rightly so. The last thing we need is a reversion to this bad practice. Loans need to be suitable and fit for purpose and affordable. This does put pressure on the overall economy, though, because this poor lending practice, which drove household consumption and home prices plus construction, will ease. And we do not have a plan B for economic success in an uncertain world, but reverting to plan A, just ease lending restrictions, is not the answer. And we hope the Royal Commission remains true to its focus on community expectations. We should demand more from the Treasury and the RBA, but then they are caught in a trap of their own making. And by the way, if you value the content we produce, please do consider joining our Patreon program where you can support our ability to make great content. The link is in the comments below. And as always, if you like what you've seen here today, please share and like the post and add a comment or question. I read them all. And if you want to join the growing band of subscribers who receive alerts when we release new posts, do subscribe now by hitting the subscribe bell. And if you have already subscribed, many thanks. I really appreciate your support and participation. I'm Martin North, the Principal Analyst at Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you again next time.